You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRag Sports. And I write for the Miami Heat's Tip-Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramel, credentialed NBA writer, who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and allyoucanheat.com. I cover the NBA at large for FanSided and FanRag Sports, and you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamel13.
We're going to get to some of these Twitter questions later on in our spotlight performance, but first, we've got Rowan Nacarny of Sports Illustrated's The Crossover and of Crossover TV fame with us today, and he's joining us for this recap of the Heat and Rockets game, which we were hoping would be a win. Turns out it was a loss. Rowan, how you doing?
I'm great. Thank you guys so much for inviting me on again. It's been too long. I'm happy to be back.
It's been a long time. But look, I don't think we've had you on this season yet, but the Heat have been playing really well lately. They entered this game against the Rockets on Monday night on national TV, on NBA TV, I should say, because we think that that's different here on the show. But they entered the game winning 9 of their last 11. They dropped this game, however. The Heat fall to 20-10 now in those clutch situations. So now another really close game between the Heat and the Rockets. And the Heat will have to wait another game at least to get their hands on third place in the East. But what was your kind of takeaway here? And you can we're going to kind of like – David and I are going to spread out here. We're going to let you ISO for a second here, Rowan, about you can talk about whether or not you could go into the direction of this game in particular, or since we haven't had you on all season, just overall general thoughts. Like, this is all you, James Harden ISO, go for it.
Well, let me say, I guess you could say this game in some ways was a microcosm of the whole season. I mean, you saw flashes of brilliance and stuff that you were really excited about, but then you just get those bits of inconsistency that are really frustrating. And, you know, tonight's game, I thought the Heat, you know, shorthanded, missing the starting backcourt, played way better than I think we expected them to. I mean, end of a long road trip, you could easily see this kind of being a blowout. And then they play so well that you're frustrated they can't close at the end. And, you know, obviously the Heat have been in so many close games this season, you can't expect them to win every single one of these clutch games. But this one seemed to be there for the taking at the end. And I think it's obvious, you know, we'd probably all be in agreement, but, you know, Hassan Whiteside, again, you know, like a microcosm of his season in this game where, you know, in the first half he was dominant, you know, doing amazing things in the post, actually passing the ball. But then in the second half, you see him kind of lose focus. He gets a lot of turnovers. It's just all very frustrating. And I think you saw kind of the whole Heat experience tonight in this one game where there are those stretches where you think they can compete with anyone in the league. But then there's just those maddening moments where they seem to lose focus. And to me, it really came to Hassan had those two turnovers late that maybe really sunk them. And I don't want to put this whole loss on him. But overall, it was an inspiring effort considering no Goran, no TJ. They did a lot of things well. I think going back home, it's going to help them a lot. And, you know, these last kind of 8-9 days have been one of the toughest stretches of the season. And they weathered it fairly well. So overall, I think you have to be, you know, content with what happened tonight. Yeah. But I think what you see on this team is, you know, maybe they're one move away from really reaching their potential.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the one move away. I mean, it seems tough to figure out what that move might actually be. I mean, obviously,
is that move trading Whiteside?
Yeah, that was the subtext there.
that's a big move. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he could solve Cleveland's defensive woes. I guess that's a possibility. Kevin Love for Hassan Whiteside straight up. Anybody interested?
I'm in.
I'd be more interested in trying to send him to Portland and seeing if they can get back one of the guards. But we can get into that stuff later. But I was mostly content with the game tonight. I mean, they kept it closer than any business keeping it without Goran and TJ. But it's just tough to see Whiteside down the stretch of the fourth quarter kind of hijack the offense the way he does sometimes.
Is it physical exhaustion? Do you think he was just tired out there? Because I think that's been part of it at times, and obviously he's still coming back from injury and he missed a bunch of games or whatever. But I think by this point, fatigue shouldn't be the issue in the fourth quarter. But it really did seem like he was just like you said before, like he had, you know, mental lapses there and losing focus that shouldn't happen if you're feeling at 100% or even close to. Obviously, he's going to be tired, but he doesn't have to be so exhausted physically that he goes through those stretches where, like that one play where he collected the rebound and kind of just like tossed it meekly somewhere, expecting Wayne Ellington to go towards it, left it open for a turnover. You know, plays like that just kind of, that, you know, have Heat fans scratching their heads going, what the hell is going on here? So I don't have any answer for it. I don't even know what that might be.
The funny thing is, in our preview of the game, we said Whiteside's got to come out and have a strong game and really set the tone early, and he did that.
He
in his first 6 minutes, he went 6 of 6 from the field for 12 points, and it was just like, wow. He blocked a couple shots. Like, it was just, wow, this guy's really putting his imprint on the game here. And then that was it. That was like, those were the best. Those were like the 6 good minutes of his game, and the rest of his game just wasn't that good. Even at the end of the first quarter, we're talking about the end of the game now, but. Even at the first quarter, at the end of the first quarter, he had a couple turnovers, started taking some of those mid-range shots that are ill-advised, and just sort of started to get away from what was so successful in that first kind of stretch of the game there. And so he didn't have that strong game that the Heat needed overall, even though he started off very strong.
Well, I guess I'll just say that I don't know if I would blame it on fatigue either. And the third quarter is definitely when Spo gave him a really long run, and he was looking to get tired. But, I mean, he came in fairly fresh in the fourth quarter. He had a good rest. I think it just comes down to you kind of have to limit his minutes because, you know, I wonder if he's almost someone who's better off the bench at this point, only because in the first quarter he has that amazing burst. And maybe he's just someone who can do it in bursts, but – I mean, it's been a problem like this now for so long where it's just focus. I mean, that pass to nowhere that just can't happen late in a game. And I don't think that was, you know, anything physical as much as it was just mental. I mean, he kind of gets ahead of himself a little bit, and I don't know how Spo can coach that out of him by now if he hasn't already.
And we don't want to blame the whole loss on Whiteside, of course, 22 points, 13
for
rebounds,
sure,
blah,
sure.
blah, blah. But you're right. I mean, there's when you have a guy like Dragic that's out and Whiteside is, I guess, the second best player on the team, you know, Josh Richardson's probably the best two-way player on this team right now. But, yeah, you need a little bit more, and you need a little bit more consistency throughout the game. We should mention that the other thing in our preview, we mentioned that they needed to do to win this game was to let it rain from 3-point range. Well, they took 30 of them, so that part, you know, was there. They only made 7 of them, though. However, that part was not there. So 7 of 30 from 3-point range. Houston did go 15 of 37 from that range. So that was quite the difference, 23% compared to 40%. There's just, at the end of the day, I mean, the Rockets are the Rockets, and they're going to make a bunch of threes. James Harden was 5 of 13 from that range. Wayne Ellington, who we thought needed a big game, he was only 3 of 11. So there's a few things that you can look at. Miami did dominate in the paint, 56 points to 34, so that was an advantage. And I thought their ball movement was really good, and they kept the turnovers relatively low until the end there. You know, so they had 16 turnovers in the game, but I think that's inflated a little bit, you know, just because I thought they struggled late in that game. But throughout most of the game, they were pretty good. So, yeah, not a lot. A couple things that you can point your finger to. But overall, I think I'm with you, Rowan. I think that it was a good effort by them against one of the best teams in the league.
Yeah. You know, listen, I mean, Miami, this is the first time they've met Houston all season. The rematch is in early February, February 7th. And by then, I think Goran and Tyler will probably be back to full strength. So hopefully at this point, you'll be able to see a much more complete version of the Heat roster. And maybe they can show that they can legitimately hang with these upper echelon teams. I mean, I think that's the overall question. They showed grit, or, you know, the willingness to compete against a very, very good team for, you know, let's say 46 out of 48 minutes. Unfortunately, they just couldn't come through in that last 2 minute stretch there. But do you think that this is still a team that can be competitive with the best teams in the league? I'm not necessarily saying whether or not they can compete for a title, but can, you know, does a game like tonight show enough positives to say that maybe Miami is still one of those teams that can hang with the better teams in the league?
I think it was. I'm more, you know, if you just take a broad look, tonight's game, again, was a great example. But, you know, it's the same team that – maybe not the same exact team, but they have 2 losses to the Nets. I mean, they have a loss to the Magic. They have a, you know, blowout loss to the Knicks. You know, they've obviously put together a really good stretch here the last 12 games or so. But I believe they probably still have a negative net rating. So I just need to see a little bit more before I think – they can compete with the best teams in the league. I think, you know, the way the East is right now, they have as good a shot as anyone to win a first round series, but that's kind of looking at like their ceiling right now for me, you know, unless they kind of tighten it up. I mean, as well as they've been playing, they're, you know, still in a lot of close games. When the Toronto game was a toss up, you know, that win in Boston earlier, you know, was a toss up. So, you know, a couple of these games go another way, we're having a completely different conversation about this team. So I still think that, you know, they can tighten it up quite a bit.
Yeah, that's fair.
We'll get to your Twitter questions that you guys sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat next. But first, hey, if you run a company and you're unhappy with your ROI with traditional advertising online or in print, try something new in 2018 and advertise with us here on Locked On Heat. National brands like SeatGeek, Draft, and MyBookie are already advertising on the show, but this is also a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. Podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with advertisers than from any other traditional media. And the number of people listening to podcasts is growing every year, as opposed to people reading newspapers or listening to radio, for example. Be ahead of the curve and start advertising on a podcast with us. You have nothing to lose by reaching out, and our rates are reasonable and based on the number of listens, so it's an efficient use of your time and money. For more information on next steps, email us at lockdownheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company right here on the show. Okay, Rowan, Spotlight Player is coming up next, but first let's get to some of these Twitter questions that you guys sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Jeff asks, thoughts on Hassan? He was a monster in building our early lead, but he also struggled somewhat through the final three quarters. Not sure what to make of the context of missing TJ and Goran Dragic. So we talked about Hassan and Whiteside quite a bit in that first segment here, but as far as this game goes, these are the sort of things where I thought there were opportunities for him, like clear opportunities for him to get better, and those were the opportunities that I thought Houston attacked, specifically in the pick and roll, like late in the game, as the game went on, and we're seeing opponents do this more and more, where they're attacking Whiteside in the pick and roll, just trying to involve him in any sort of action possible. Harden and Chris Paul, in particular, when they're doing it, that's deadly. And there were times when Whiteside was good, but there was a lot of times when Whiteside was bad, and I just don't know. I don't want to pin all that on Whiteside. It just might be the sort of just the way the league is working right now. I mean, there's a reason why so many people use pick and roll right now as a staple play and the function of their offense, and why traditional seven-footers like Whiteside are fewer and further between and not getting paid like they used to or not valued like they used to be. So there's a point where the Heat, at the end of this game, they have to go to Bam Adebayo at center, who's a little bit more mobile than Whiteside, or Kelly Olynyk more and more. And that just might be where the Heat are sort of at right now, is that Hassan, despite being a max contract guy, is really a situational player. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree that Houston is also a team that is a especially bad matchup for Hassan. I mean, when they're spreading the floor the way they are, when they're playing P.J. Tucker and Ryan Anderson as their front court, the spotlight is really, really going to be on Hassan. You know, we've obviously had a lot of criticism so far tonight on this podcast, but I agree, we can't pin this all on him. I mean, he's just, at the end of the day, always going to be a half step slow for, you know, a team that plays small like Houston, mm-hmm. or if you wanted to say Golden State or someone like that. I mean, this is just a really bad matchup for him, right? I mean, he played pretty well on some switches tonight. Mm-hmm. He made it tough for guys like Chris and James to shoot over him. So, you know, he wasn't a total lost cause. But in terms of tonight on defense, I think Hassan's, you know, inabilities were more a function of Houston's offense than his own effort, which is pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he played pretty decently in stretches there in the first half in particular. I thought he did a pretty good job of kind of gauging the timing of those pick and roll plays. He snuffed out a couple of lobs at the rim and kind of limited what Capella did in the first half in particular. I'm not sure what the numbers indicate, but it felt like Capella didn't get most of his scoring until the second half. I'm not sure what kind of an impact he had in the first. And I think a lot of that was because of Whiteside playing pretty well in pick and roll situations. And I got to be honest with you, I was really impressed with his passing. I mean, we haven't talked about that at all. And again, these are just baby steps in comparison to some of the better passing bigs in the league. But for Whiteside to be able to have the kind of patience that he showed on key plays there, that was pretty impressive. And unfortunately, again, that didn't work out in the fourth quarter. It seemed like, you know, again, the same issue of him losing focus. But for him to make those kind of quality passes to open or cutting teammates, that was, I mean, we haven't seen that from him consistently since he joined Miami at any point, to be honest with you. So I think we're starting to see that more often now. And I think a game like tonight, that it really showed how much Miami's offense can benefit from having Hassan make this kind of quality play.
Yeah, 2 assists on the night. And look, towards the end of that first half, Houston went small. They put Ryan Anderson at center, and Spoelstra didn't call D'Antoni's bluff. He stayed big with Whiteside, and Whiteside played well and was a reason why Miami was able to kind of keep Houston off their heels and at the end of the first half there, going into that third quarter. So
yeah, I mean, I just want to say, you know, I'm looking at the box score, it's like, you know, in such a tight game, if Ellington hits a couple more threes, if JJ hits one of his threes, you know, we're not putting any blame on Whiteside because it's a win. So, you know, I understand that there are issues with Hassan, and I'm definitely, you know, the person maybe at the front of that train, but, you know, he definitely had his positives tonight, and I think David did a good job of kind of bringing that up.
You're on the right show then, because we get constantly criticized for criticizing Whiteside way too much, but there's a lot from him. We're not mad, we're just disappointed. Chris writes in, why doesn't Justice Winslow do any drive and kicking? Seems like a bit of a waste. This is in reference, obviously, to Justice Winslow playing backup point guard quite a bit within the last couple games. It's actually a pretty interesting thought. We got this question kind of in the middle of the game, and I started watching it a little bit more after we saw this kind of pop up on Twitter. I don't know if it's like a functional thing that Spoelstra doesn't want Winslow driving and kicking, or if Winslow's reluctant to do that, and I guess he's kind of, you know, maybe we're trying to see something like what Dion Waiters and Dragic did more so last season than this season a little bit. But I think when Winslow gets to the rim, he just tends to put the ball up, and that's fine, you know, but
it's not, because he's not converting it at a particularly high rate. So.
That's a good point. I don't know if it's anything other than that, though. He puts the ball up, and then if he's going to pass it, he does it before he gets to the rim.
Yeah, I thought Justice tonight, Spo wasn't necessarily doing him any favors with the lineups he was in terms of driving kicking specifically. I mean, when you're sharing the floor with, you know, Derek Walton Jr. can shoot a little bit, but I mean, are you really trusting him behind the arc? I mean, Winslow plays a lot of his minutes alongside Bam, so those drive and kick opportunities may not necessarily be there. I mean, Ellington has not really been a spot up shooter for Miami. You know, obviously he's getting most of his threes coming off screens and things like that. So I don't know if the issue is Winslow's not being a willing passer. I mean, he had 4 assists tonight. He had that amazing pass to Hassan on a transition play. So I think the drive and kick opportunities will come, but I mean, the Heat's offense, you know, this might be anecdotal more so than the stats, but it's not really built on, you know, finding that corner three as much as it used to be in the past. I mean, a lot of their threes are now coming off handoffs and things like that. So I think that's maybe stifling, you know, Winslow's drive and kick game more than anything else.
Yeah, and I'm sure those opportunities will probably be there with guys like Tyler Johnson and Goran Dragic, who can shoot from the corner and will be there as spot-up shooters, creating more opportunities. So I think we've seen more of that throughout the course of the season. So it's more than likely that once those shooters are back in the lineup, that Winslow will have better opportunities. But I wonder, I mean, the finishing at the rim is particularly alarming. I think it's just a problem for him at this point. And, you know, if we're going to see the outside shooting stabilize a little bit, I think, you know, he's been very impressive in that regard. I think we still need to see more improvement from him finishing at the rim and making better decisions. And, you know, the fact is he's still young. He's still going to be making some questionable choices with the ball. And I think he's growing through it and making the most of the opportunities.
I just want, you know, building off David's point real quick, it is kind of concerning that Winslow just doesn't seem to have that right touch around the rim,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But he's had a couple of nice finishes, in, you know, against Charlotte. And even tonight, he had a couple of nice finishes at the rim. He had an and one. So maybe it's getting slightly better, but he can definitely improve his touch around that area.
That's a good point. I don't know if it's maybe a lack of confidence thing, because he seemed to have that touch at Duke. I mean, obviously, I didn't watch him as closely at Duke than as I do when he's in Miami now. But I don't know. It sort of maybe was there and then it fell away. And I don't know if maybe shooting better from three as he has recently will sort of start to help that. I don't know. It's so hard to tell with him. All right, we're going to get to our spotlight player performance of the game next, which Rowan is in charge of, as well as a surprise segment that we're not going to tell you about yet. But first, quick reminder to make sure that you are subscribed to Locked On Heat on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast, including now Spotify. Go check us out there as well. And don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes. It helps other Heat fans discover the show. For example, Sir Michael Hawk. He was knighted. This guy is a big deal. writes about our show. Only the Dan Le Batard show with Stu Gatz sits ahead of the show on my podcast list. That may be seniority for now, and this show may take Dan's spot soon. If you're a Heat fan, it's a necessity. So, hey, not bad. You know, one day we'll be better than Dan Le Batard. Who knows? Also, be sure to check out the rest of what the Locked On Podcast Network has to offer, including shows for every NBA and NFL team. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Okay.
It's always nice to get some love from royalty, I think. So that's a big plus.
Yeah.
Yeah, big. Good for Sir Michael Hawk. I mean, I guess, you know, listening all the way from the UK, it would appear.
We're an international – hey, you know, we're huge in New Zealand, let me tell you. Like 10% of our listeners are Kiwis. So.
New Zealand, Australia, we're big. All right. Rowan, you got a big – you have a big responsibility. We're not going to knight you for it, but you do have the responsibility of tonight's spotlight performance. Who you got?
Yeah, I mean, this is exciting. You know, I've been a long time, so I felt this kind of pressure. I want to put the spotlight on Derrick Jones Jr., who started again for the Heat. First of all, it's kind of remarkable. You know, Spo's always been the guy who doesn't like messing with his bench, so he'll have some weird starting lineups. But, you know, Derrick Jones Jr. has been a very capable fill-in starter so far this season. Tonight, I mean, he was playing great defense on James Harden for much of the game. I mean, really made Harden work. Harden didn't have an efficient game. I mean, shot 10 of 26, and he only got to the free throw line four times, which is a good sign. So I think Derrick Jones Jr. was responsible for a lot of that. And beyond that, his energy on the offensive glass is just very exciting. It's been a long time since the Heat had a guy like him who's really crashing the boards. I mean, at least once a night he makes, you know, some kind of offensive rebound that legitimately makes you say, wow, like I didn't see him coming. You can see the bounce. You can see why he's so intriguing and why he's kind of stuck around the NBA is that his athleticism, I mean, it really jumps off the screen. I mean, he gets so high on some of these offensive rebounds attempts. And, you know, Spo can kind of turn him into another defender, you know, like a Justice Winslow or someone like that. I think he brings a lot of value to the team. And tonight, I think you saw the reason why he stuck around, why Spo is burning through the NBA days on his G League, his two-way contract so quickly. He's really flashed, and I think tonight was, you know, obviously in a losing effort, but one of the better games he's played all season.
Yeah, his defense on Harden in particular, on some plays, was really impressive. Like, he has a knack for being able to move his feet well, and he's got the length to kind of make things difficult. I think he might have actually blocked a shot from Harden, too. So, I mean, you know, he didn't have the reputation of being a defender, mostly just like a high flyer that could finish at the rim and would get occasional dunks and highlight, you know, worthy reels and stuff like that. But for the most part, just not really a quality defender in Phoenix. But I wonder how much of that was just, well, Phoenix doesn't have really any kind of defender since they traded, you know, or since PJ Tucker has left a couple seasons ago. So I don't even know at this point, you know, if Derrick Jones Jr., do you think a guy that can kind of fit on this team in the long term? A lot of people are asking us whether or not he's too raw, whether or not there's a place for him on this team is a big question, I think.
I don't know if he'll necessarily be – he certainly won't be a starter long term, but I definitely think he's a guy you want on your bench who can really be a good situational player. I mean, it's obvious he can play defense. One thing that I like that he kind of adds a little bit of a fast break element to this team that maybe they haven't had much of this season. I mean, he seems to be a good player in transition. He attacks the basket well. You know, I'd love to see him running alongside, you know, Gorn in transition and kind of bring back that fast break game that Gorn hasn't maybe necessarily gotten out to as much as he wants to this season. So, you know, long term, I'm not expecting him to be, you know, a big part of the rotation. But if you can keep him around on a small deal, I think he's absolutely worth it.
I mean, the Heat now, I mean, February 8th, right, is the trade deadline. My prediction here, just based on reading tea leaves, is that they're going to try to maybe move AJ Hammonds or a smaller contract like that to get off of a deal and then maybe make room for Derrick Jones Jr. They've applied for that that injury exception because of Deion Waiters having surgery and missing the rest of the season. So they've got, if they get it, and we expect that they will, about $5.5 million to spend. Of course, DJ won't cost that much money, but they'll have that that they'll be able to use and kind of keep their cap situation in control, which is important because they're bumping up right up against it. So they'll be able to do it. So if you move on from a smaller deal, maybe ship them off for something or some, I don't know, get involved in a three-way deal where you're not really taking anything back in return or something. Maybe they try to do that, or they just flat out waive Hammonds or Carroll White or somebody like that on an expiring deal and bring Derek Jones Jr. in, because he's only got a few more days left on his two-way deal. And these are days, not games. And that's a key thing with these contracts. So they're going to have to make room for him somehow, you know, if they want to keep him on the team for the rest of the season. All right. We should get to our last segment in here. It's our surprise segment. Last time you were on the show, Rowan, you told us about cooking steak in a cast iron skillet. You were doing some pieces for GQ about cooking. I know your Instagram is filled with some big recipes. And I got to say, I tried it. You know, we didn't just do it for the show. I went and I got a cast iron skillet and I tried it with some ribeye steaks, melt some butter in the pan there, like you said, do 4 minutes on each side, like you said. It was the Rowan special, and it turns out great. Perfect medium rare every time. I love it. It's one of my go-to recipes. So now you're here again. I need a new recipe. What do you have?
Well, first of all, let me say that I'm honored. I'm honored that you took my advice. I'm excited for you that you have the cast iron skillet. I used mine tonight for some hanger steak. I mean, there's just so many possibilities there. They're really endless. So I'm truly humbled, you know, that you went out and did it. And I'm happy for you. You know, I'm glad you're eating those ribeyes over
there. Wait, hold on. So is the hanger steak your recipe?
No, I need to ask you. The ribeyes.
I'm looking at hanger steaks quite a bit, too, because I get a good deal with the place I go to. I usually do them on the grill. Do you marinate them before you put them in the cast iron, though? Because they could be a little tough.
It depends. They can. So the key for hanger, you got to cook it, you know, really quickly. I try to go no longer than 7 minutes. You want to make sure you're keeping it, you know, at a medium rare at most. Mm-hmm. You also want to slice that against the grain. That's a really big part of when you're eating a hanger steak. Make sure you slice it against the grain. It makes it a lot less chewy. So, you know, you can marinate it. I don't always do it. Sometimes I like to make like a chimichurri or a salsa verde to serve on the side with it. But, you know, again, a lot of possibilities with hanger steak, but that's one you got to make sure you cook quickly, let it rest, and slice it properly, and it comes out a lot better.
As a vegetarian, I just want to add that this conversation makes me very uncomfortable.
Oh, no. David, a vegetarian. Wow. I feel like I'm learning so much about you right now.
Yeah. I'm sorry. All these talk about steaks, I curse both of you completely. I'm damn hungry. I don't know if any place is open here at night where I could go beat somebody up for a steak, but thanks a lot, guys.
I usually beat people up for steak. That's crazy.
Yeah. I didn't realize that's what it requires for you to eat some steak.
Well, you know, when you haven't eaten meat for as long as I have, I guess, you know, you're kind of, that's part of the thrill. Yeah.
All right. What's the recipe though? Cause I'm going to try this and I'm going to report back next time you're on the show.
Okay. Wow. All right. So it's not vegetarian. I apologize to David. Okay. I didn't know if I'd known. I would have brought – all right, Wes. So this next one's a little involved. It's a recipe that's close to home. You know, it could be tough for you to pull it off. It's going to take dedication to acquire the ingredients. But here we go. This is a fried fish recipe that my mother passed down to me. It's something I'm – it's a comfort food for me, something I make when I'm really craving a taste of home. You know, you're going to need a pretty simple fish for this. You know, tilapia will do. So a catfish, even cod, you know, all totally fine.
A white fish.
You know, maybe – yes, exactly. Let's say you get a pound of it. Very, very simple recipe. You know, first just wash the fish, kind of dry it off. Then you're going to do like the simplest marinade ever. It's about a teaspoon of turmeric powder.
Okay.
You want to get like a good chili powder. Now I use like an Indian chili powder called Kashmiri chili powder. You could probably get it in an Indian market in your area. I suggest you go out and get it because it's worth it. You want to use about half a teaspoon to a teaspoon of the chili powder.
Can you spell that?
Depending on how spicy you like it. Yes, I can. It's Kashmiri.
Okay, I'm taking notes.
It's like the Led Zeppelin song with an eye on it. That's what it is.
Yes, exactly. So you're going to get, you know, the turmeric and the chili powder, and then maybe about a teaspoon or two of lemon juice. And some salt. Now, salt to your taste. I like, you know, I like it fairly salty, especially when I'm frying something. So just coat the fish in that marinade. Let it sit about 15 minutes or so. This is the key. When you bread the fish, ideally you want to do it in a 50-50 mix of all-purpose flour and rice flour. Mm. Just gives a little bit of a different coating. And then you could fry it right in your cast iron skillet. You don't need to deep fry it or anything. You know, just get like a healthy amount of oil in there just so it's definitely covering, you know, the entire surface of the pan. Doesn't need to come up super high or anything. Maybe about an eighth of an inch will do. And then just fry your fish about 3 or 4 minutes on each side. I like to keep the oil fairly high, medium high heat, just so you get a good sizzle when you drop it in the pan. You know, you can also cut the fish up into smaller pieces. That makes it a little easier to fry. Yeah, about 3 or 4 minutes on each side. Super simple, super easy, and I promise it's delicious. And then I also give it a little more salt when I take it out of the pan.
Do you serve it with anything, like any kind of like potato starch kind of thing?
I like to serve it with rice. I'm a big rice guy. But I got to be honest, sometimes like I just eat a lot of the fish by itself, and then I don't have room for anything else.
Sounds like
But yes, rice is always a classic.
So you said 50-50 all-purpose flour, and what was the other flour?
Rice flour.
Rice flour, okay. I've got my notes.
Man, Wes is serious about this.
Huh? I'm serious. I'm going to try this out, and I'm going to do it next time. I might have to do like almond flour. Do you think an almond flour or a coconut flour would work?
I've never tried it. I mean, you might as well give it a shot. Yeah. You know, my mom came up with this flour blend. I don't know how or why she got it from, but I mean, feel free to experiment and let me know. Maybe you'll get, you know, a crispier crust or a different crust. So I'm excited to see, you know, your spin on it.
I'll definitely, you know, I'll tweet it out when I do it.
There we go.
So I love it. I think I'm going to do it not with rice, but maybe with like a kale or a spinach or something like that. Because
that's probably the healthier option.
Even as a vegetarian, I can't approve of kale. Sorry.
There we go. I love David. I like where your mind is at.
All right. Well, we'll be back tomorrow. Well, and Rowan won't, but David and I will be. That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. Thank you, Rowan, for joining us. Tell the listeners where they can find you.
Yeah, I would ask everyone go follow The Crossover on Twitter at The Crossover. That's where you can find myself, Ben Golliver, Andrew Sharp, Rob Mahoney, Chris Ballard, Lee Jenkins, Jeremy Wu, you know, our whole cast of writers at Sports Illustrated. I think we have one of the best basketball staffs in the world. So I'd encourage everyone to follow at The Crossover. That's where you can find all of us. So we got a ton of stuff going up on there every day.
While you're filling your time between Locked On Heat podcasts too, go check out the Breakaway podcast that Rob does. I think he tweeted something about season 2 coming out soon. Mm. Definitely worth some time. It's a really unique podcast.
Breakaway is awesome.
Yeah, one of my
favorites. You could send mailbag questions. Yeah, David, I think you're the one that turned me on to it. Really good find.
Yeah.
You could send mailbag questions and ask about advertising by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining us, guys.